Now, when I can afford to travel, I'm always looking at getting as much of the experience as possible. But how much do the lessons we learn and bits of insight we gain from traveling stick around when we return to our lives back here in Adelaide? Well, Gerald Matthews from Matthews Architects joins us now, having just come back from his own trip. Good morning, Gerald.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Now, what was the purpose of your recent traveling adventures?
I was overseas in Scotland studying business, so it's not exactly my core field of architecture, but you know, business is important, so you get to learn about it. And was lucky enough to be studying with the University of Glasgow. They have a business school that's pretty well renowned. So I scored a place to go study with them in a tiny little town called Dumfries, which is in Scotland, which is gorgeous, to be honest. And anyone who tells you that Scotland is dreary and dark and rainy, they're lying. You should go.
Keep it for themselves.
Yeah. But go at this time of year. So go in our winter and yeah, then they're flat out liars. Just don't go there in winter, apparently, because you know, apparently
dreary.
It's worse than us. I was remarking that Adelaide's this really nice place to come home to, but you got to kind of contrast it against other things to really appreciate it, which is why I'm enthusiastic about travel. Travel for architects is some of the best education you could have. You know, your degree as an architect is not a cheap one. You know, it's 5 years of pretty intensive study, and you're going to end up with a bit of a debt after it. But the investment that you make in yourselves in terms of travel is it will just pay dividends for the rest of your life.
So on that note, obviously that trip had a core function of education. You were specifically studying there, but for architects, and you said that's an important part. Why is it so important to travel?
It's partly because you realise that not everywhere is like here, and Adelaide has a particular Achilles heel here in that if you grow up in Adelaide, you start life with this assumption that every city is well ordered and well planned and curated to a degree. And then when you start finding strange places on the planet, you realize that most places are not like that. There's actually very few cities in the world that are as carefully planned as Adelaide. Most cities have this seed or this core that just sort of happened. It evolved and it was a decision by a few people, if that. Sometimes they literally just happened and no one knows why they happened. And those are the cities that fascinate me, the ones that you walk into the town square and it's definitely not a square. And it's not flat. It's some sort of weird polygon that's just sort of happened between buildings. And no one decided it should be like that. It just happened. Those spaces, I think, have a lot to teach cities that are well-planned because they have successes that we can't have, these sort of human accidents of space. Like in Adelaide, we've got this big central square, Victoria Square, which, to be honest, for the density of our city at the moment, that square's too big. It probably shows great foresight, but Victoria Square is a square of a scale that would require roughly 3 to 4 times the population in Adelaide in order for that square to really make sense. And you can tell that because we've just cut it into pieces with roads. For it to actually function as a town square rather than just an open space in the city, for it to be, you know, the space where if you're going to assemble in anger or joy or celebration, that's the town square. And we clearly don't need a space that's the size of Victoria Square because we've cut it into pieces. So we tend to assemble in what urban designers call dynamic spaces, like King William Street. You know, it's a place of movement. It's not a place of dwelling. And the cities that seem to have the right balance between scale and density and evolve tend to be left with legacies of very small town squares. Too small, because the town square formed back when there were fewer people. And we're in the opposite situation of it's like wearing, you know, when you're a little kid, it's like wearing your parents' shoes. We're still in our parents' shoes. We're still in Colonel Light's massive boots, really, and we haven't filled them yet, which makes it hard to comprehend how you correlate, you know, our town square to a town square in Brussels, which still fits them very well. And I'm sure people have written theses about why.
So now you've already spoken quite a bit on what it is that you see, but when everyone travels, they kind of experience a different place differently. It might be the food or the, you know, the smell of the beer or, you know, the sound of the music or the way the media kind of attacks you. Not that we attack anybody here on Radio Adelaide. So what is it like traveling as in the mind of an architect like Gerald Matthews? What are the kind of things that you're looking out for?
The first thing I'd say about the way architects travel is it's not about buildings. And that sounds...
Well, that's surprising.
It sounds strange to say that, but there's certainly landmark buildings that I have made an effort to specifically go and see. But the bulk of my travel is not specifically about buildings. It's about the spaces between the buildings. It's not about the architectural wonders. It's about the city they inhabit. And I'm a great believer in the idea of traveling versus tourism. If you're a tourist, you're going to see the building. You're going to learn about its history. You're going to see this particular thing. You're seeing things essentially within a tapestry. I'm more of a believer in the tablecloth, like get in amongst it, get involved in the event, the performance. You know, some of the best performances I've seen in my life have been, I don't want to say free because buskers have to make a living, but they're essentially public performances and, you know, crowd-funded. And they take place in these sort of wonderful spaces of cities. So the first thing I would say that architects always do, and I don't know an architect for whom this is an exception, they look up. As you're walking, you spend just as much time looking above the ground plane. Ground plane is what architects call just like the place you walk around in a city. We spend time looking up at the city because you see things that you wouldn't if you're just normally living at eye level. And what you see is the shapes that form the spaces that you are psychologically affected by. And architects, I guess, are looking for why does it feel good? Why does this space not want me to stay here? Why do I feel like I should keep walking? The other thing I tend to look for is, how would you navigate the city if you can't read a map? Like, a lot of people aren't good with maps. So I tend to be very interested in the way cities connect interesting places with strong lines and how the landmarks in the city allow people to find their way without even a mental map. Because I think, historically speaking, maps are a pretty new phenomenon. You know, if you were traveling in a city as a merchant 500 years ago, be pretty lucky if you had a map. So you had to find your way using locals or using just clever wayfinding. And the way different cities organize that, every city is unique. I've never been to two cities. Even Adelaide's sister city, which is Christchurch, which is almost a carbon copy of Adelaide, is still different enough that you could get lost if you're from Adelaide there without a map. But not everyone enjoys maps. So I tend to be very interested in the way places of importance in cities are connected with strong lines. And the weird thing if you grow up in Adelaide is you assume that strong lines means wide street, means, you know, a clearly defined straight line. But most cities that evolve sort of organically, a strong line can be a busy little crooked laneway. So learning to recognize the difference between a strong line and just a pathway is probably the first thing. And all you need to do that is notice the people. So when I travel, it's not about buildings, it's more about the people.
So those are some things that clearly that you do now as you travel, but what are maybe some habits that you've formed to ensure that you're taking these things in, that you're getting the most out of your experience when you're traveling?
I always take photographs, and I take a crazy amount of photographs. And I'd have to admit that if I tortured people by showing them my photographs, there probably are a lot of buildings in them. The stuff that you readily absorb when you're standing there is mostly the human impact stuff, and that you don't really have a choice. That's going to stick with you. It's, you know, the way the light comes across the street, a particular pizza that you ate sitting in a piazza. It's those sort of sensory and tactile stuffs. You can't capture those in photographs. So it's better to spend some time not taking photographs. The things I tend to take photographs of are scenes, not objects. So it's not a monument, it's the space in which it inhabits. And that's partly because you can't possibly notice everything about it at the time, but it's the type of thing that a couple of years later you might look at the photograph and think, wow, I never noticed that, you know, this little old shop has actually been refitted into a crummy chemist. Like, that's weird. And all of those odd things that you don't want to distract yourself with at the time, there's too much information. So I tend to use just photography as a means to enjoy the experience without having to soak it all in at one moment.
Speaking with Gerald Matthews from Matthews Architects about the educational aspects you can find from traveling. Now, there are things that you can learn, like sort of personal development things that I think sometimes happen when you're on holidays if you're doing it in a certain way. How difficult is it to carry those things that you can learn and carry those things that you can feel from this holiday back into, you know, your life when you return?
All of the things that have stuck with me that I think are really valuable sort of life lessons tend to come from interactions with people. There's the subtle stuff that sort of seeps into your brain about place and identity and culture. And some of that's, you know, events that you put yourself in. You know, like, do you walk around the lake or do you dive in? Those questions. There's deep answers about yourself. And what that's really, you know, tells me when I travel is I find out about myself. But the lessons I bring back are usually interactions I've had with people. And the first rule of getting those interactions is travel cheap. Like, you're going to have a richer, more rewarding engagement with the world if you don't sequester yourself in, you know, some number of stars hotel. You know, don't spend the money while you're sleeping. Sleep cheap, engage with people. Hostels are the greatest way to travel.
Now, what do you make of the idea of being a tourist in your own city? Is that something that you think is even possible to do, to get a totally different view of Adelaide, not just because you're flying in after, you know, a month or so away, but because you're actively trying to look at it differently?
Yeah, and you get that experience too when you've got visitors coming from overseas. Mm. Like when people come to visit and you start thinking, right, what would I show you? What is there to do here? And it's remarkable when they discover things that you didn't know about. I quite like that moment when they say, I've heard about this. I've heard about kayaking with dolphins on the Port River. It's like, really? That's a thing? Yeah, that's a thing. So every time people visit from overseas, and again, these are the sort of human connections that you want to make when you're traveling. It's about the people. Every time they come to visit, I learn something about the city. And the things that I appreciate about the city may not be the touristy things. And I think it's important to note that as awesome as South Australia and Adelaide is as a tourist destination, when I meet people overseas and they say, oh, I'm thinking about coming to Adelaide, I tend to say, come in March. Like,
yeah, it, I think it's we all happened. Do just about.
And it's partly because I want them to have as deep and rich experience as possible. And when I first started saying that to people, I felt like, am I false advertising here? Am I just telling you to come at the only time that I think is like deeply interesting? And I don't think it's false advertising because the same could be said of any city.
Hmm.
You know, it would be, when should you go to Rio? You know, when should you go to Calgary? You know, each of these places, like the Calgary Stampede, each of these places has a thing that changes them for a period of time. And I like that Adelaide has one of those. But when it's not happening, it does make me wonder, like, how do people see us when they just come here cold? How does someone see Adelaide if they come here and they don't know anyone? Because Adelaide is one of those cities where until you know someone, there's a lot of secrets that you just won't find out about. You know, no matter how many Lonely Planet guides we're in.
Well, there's a whole range of things for us to mull over and consider, and maybe a helpful way to maybe be a tourist in our own city of Adelaide and think about it more carefully. Gerald, thanks for joining us this morning.
Always a pleasure.
Gerald Matthews from Matthews Architects there, speaking about mindfulness in travel and how you can get your most educational experience out of it.